Welcome back, everybody, to another installment of the Ride or Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, the social media Sasquatch, Don Detweiler. And as per usual, we've got the usual rogues gallery here of commentators to bring you all the news that is Dynasty and fantasy related. Coming back to us from maternity leave here, we've got Rob.
Paternity leave, but yeah, good to be back. Good to use the right words.
That's right. Everybody deserves their credit as needed. Brandon? Yeah,
my nipples are useless. That's the key between maternity and paternity.
No, it's probably so very true. Good luck following that, Brandon.
I can't. I'll keep it moving then.
And Kit.
Hey, happy to be here, guys.
All right, well, if you could all do us a favor, check us out at RiderDynasty.com. The Riders are putting out all kinds of awesome content on the regular here to help keep you up with individual trends. Our friend the Devi Dirtbag is about to make some more appearances to get you ready for next year's Devi installments. We've got all kinds of injury updates, and check out our sister podcast here, the Next Man Up podcast, where you can get real, honest-to-God healthcare professionals telling you what is happening to all of your teams and just how bad things could be for how long. So please, again, check us out at all those places available. Now, on to the news. Chicagoland, where things are starting to heat up for the Bears. Something has to heat up because, God, that offensive line is terrible. We're now back to having Fields and Dalton both slated to practice. Dalton has been reiterated to be the starter because Matt Nagy doesn't have a spine and doesn't want to stay with Fields, but probably better for Fields so he doesn't get his head beat in. Kit, what are your thoughts on that situation?
It's an awful situation all around. Justin Fields didn't look ready, but he was put in a terrible position. I saw something about on average there was he had 0.92 seconds to throw, which is obscene. Like, two is very fast. I think that Nagy's not long for Chicago. One or two more ugly wins, and that's probably the end of that. And I don't know who would take over, but something different seems like it would be better. I think to some extent it's smart not to keep rolling Fields out there if that's going to be the situation he's in. So we'll see if Dalton's good to go this week or not.
Yeah, you really do have to protect your young asset. And speaking of assets, Rob, what does this quarterback instability and offensive line instability do to all of our other Chicago fantasy assets?
It makes it hard to start any Chicago offensive weapons outside of David Montgomery. I mean, if you have Montgomery, you got to roll with him. He gets touches. The backfield's mostly to himself, but you're disappointed on everything that Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson, Cole Kmet, any of the passing weapons there, they just haven't produced.
There has been so little there that it's almost at the point where you have to consider moving on. And Brandon, if I happen to have Allen Robinson, is it time to trade or do we have to just ride it out to protect the value?
I think you've almost got to ride it out because nobody's going to give you decent value. They just expect the quarterback situation to continue as poorly as it has been. And I think you've got to ride it out and just hope for the best.
Yeah, the value is what it is at this point. So you've got your guy. You kind of have to hang on. He's franchised this year, so he doesn't have to be back in Chicagoland next year. We can hope that he ends up with greener pastures because unless they do significant work to readdress that offensive line, bear in mind they don't have a first-round draft pick last year because they moved up to take an offensive tackle who ended up being hurt, which explains why he plummeted through the draft process. All right, on to Baltimore, where finally there might be some good news for a receiving crew here that has just been decimated, and maybe Lamar gets some help. Rookie, hopefully sensation, we'll find out. Bateman has been activated off the IR and is expected to get some run this week. Now, granted, he lost a lot of the preseason and a lot of preparation, but Brandon, he's got to be better than what they have, right?
He has to be, but with that being said, I'm pretty low on him. I like him as an individual talent. He was a beast in Minnesota. But the Ravens have been bad drafting receivers early in the draft pretty recently. Last year, Devin Duvernay in the third, that's a bad pick. I'm not a huge fan of Hollywood Brown. I know he's been decently consistent, except for about a million drop touchdowns this past Sunday. And then Boykin in the third round of that same Hollywood draft, he's a bust. The year before, Hayden Hurst in the first round of 2018, also a bust. So they haven't had a great history as of late drafting pass catchers. So I'm pretty low on him right now.
So let's pretend that Bateman comes in and he's able to open some things up. Does that mean it's time to start actually starting in our fantasy lineups the rest of the Baltimore backfield, Rob?
I think so. I'm not as pessimistic as Brendan on the Ravens. And, you know, I think their front office deserves a ton of credit. It's hard, you know, it's easy to point fingers when you name the wide receivers that they did, but they've absolutely crushed it everywhere else in the draft, including the undrafted guys that they bring in after the draft. And Lamar Jackson, the coaching staff, the front office, they all have my support. I'll plug and play at will people from that offense.
All right, Kit, your turn. Anything I say about Lamar is going to seem coming through black and gold colored spectacles here. So give me some voice of reason. What's the outlook like for him? Is he still among the fantasy elite, or are we starting to look at him more like he's in that middle upper tier?
Geez, that's close. I mean, I still think of him as an elite super flex asset. I do. I think the rushing offers a floor that's excellent and a ceiling. He's a guy who, you know, I expect to finish, you know, in the top eight for the next 5 years, something like that. Or top 12 at least. He's still someone I'm very interested in getting. I think the hate is a little overblown. There's some things he doesn't do great, right? But there's a lot of things he does that no other quarterback does. So I'm still very pro Lamar, and I want him on my teams.
There we go. Somebody who said something different than I would have, because I'm just not seeing it. I love to hope that he's going to make it, because he's a tremendously talented young man, and he's definitely the avant-garde of this new wave of quarterbacks coming through that have the elite athleticism and the ability to throw the ball and push the ball down the field that are really going to take over fantasy for the foreseeable. Getting into the main topics now, let's talk about New England, and let's also look at this as the running backs you can get cheap, because that's half of them are on waivers and can be had for nothing or a little fat money, and half of them can be gotten for cheap. So we lose James White, the legit running back here, because he's just the receiving magnet that he always had been. He's now out for the season. So what does that do for the rest of the shuffle? Robbie, what do you think?
It's hard to like a New England backfield. I thought we were getting some clarity the first couple weeks into the season. It looked like Damian Harris was the man and James White was going to get his balls out of the backfield and everyone else was an afterthought. They seem to hate Ramondre Stevenson already after an early season fumble. And then in typical New England fashion, they surprise everyone and Brandon Bolden gets all of the receiving work out of the backfield after James White goes out. Everyone thought it was J.J. Taylor. I've stashed J.J. Taylor on countless dynasty leagues, and I found myself picking Brandon Bolden up off the waiver wire just in case, but I don't think he can start anyone outside of Damian Harris for the rest of the season.
Running back is definitely, to me anyway, this year, the most confounding position, because outside the top couple, it's dribs and drabs and just hoping that somebody blows up and really catches a pile of passes in a week to try and get us through. And nobody's been more indicative of that than Najee Harris in Pittsburgh, who last week had an insane 19 targets for 14 catches, including two drops. But hey, when you're getting the ball thrown at you 19 times, stuff's going to happen. So is this how things are going to be? Are we going to see more running backs using the reception and the long handoff, as it were? Or are we going to get some guys that we can have value with? Kit, what do you think about that?
I mean, they're guys that I'm certainly going to target. I mean, him, you know, Eckler, Swift, they have value sort of just what – I mean, the Steelers played awful, right? Ben looks like he can't do anything. The line was terrible, right? So he averaged 3 points something a carry, and he still ended up having an amazing fantasy day, right? And so from that perspective, you know, the guys that are going to be getting, you know, close to 10 targets, which is obscene, but, you know, 6-plus targets are just, to me – absolute targets in any sort of PPR format. Yeah. And so, I mean, I don't know whether the start of the season is actually positive or negative for Najee's outlook, because I have some concerns that, you know, with Ben, but I think, you know, for this season, it seems like that'll probably keep up, and yeah, like guys like him.
Brandon, same question.
Yeah. I mean, the 19 a game, that's an aberration, right? Like, that's not going to continue. I don't think any of us think that. But he's legit. Like, his talent's legit. Like Kit said, the line is bad, and I don't really know how it improves this season. Ben is very bad, and I don't see him improving this season or ever. I'm pretty down, you know, on the outlook. I get the volume is there, and that's what you want. But in order to have, you know, one of those elite backs that sets you apart, it's got to all be there.
It is nice to see that those who invested the capital to take him very early are being rewarded for that. It seems to be the stated objective that he's going to be getting the ball frequently. And as long as that offensive line is Drek, and that's going to continue, they will get a new offensive lineman back in Zach Banner this week. So that might help a little bit, but same time, Chukwuma Okorafor, who's one of the other tackles, is still out with concussion protocol. So whether that really gets better or not remains to be seen. We could certainly hope, but again, that's hope. And the schedule does no favors for the Steelers this year. Mike Williams is off to, as Kit predicted, the insane breakout, and is currently sitting as the wide receiver 2 in PPR behind Fundisay Cooper Kupp, who just continues to be an absolute football magnet. Do we see Mike Williams continuing this, and can he continue to be the man and even outshadow, who thought we were going to say this besides Kit, outshadow and outshine Mr. Allen? Robbie, what do you think? Is Williams for real and going to continue, or is this like the pretense to his leg falling off?
Man, I don't want to steal Kit's thunder here, but I laughed at Kit when he called him as a breakout a month or so ago. I laughed. And then last week I wrote a column that looked at his targets through the first 2 weeks and Keenan Allen's, and his snap percentage suggests that Keenan Allen is still the alpha there, no matter what the production's showing. But the red zone targets are equal to Keenan, and Herbert just likes him. So, I mean, I think his targets will dip a little bit, but the production should stay relatively high. I mean, if he finishes at RB at wide receiver 2, I would be shocked. But, I mean, I think it's clear at this point he's going to be a top 12 wide receiver come into season unless he gets injured.
Yeah, Robbie, I figured I'd give you your chance at your mea culpa on this deal just so Kit could hear it. And, Brandon, could you take a moment and just talk a little bit about Justin Herbert's growth and how that's impacted this?
Yeah, I mean, he's everything you want and more in a franchise quarterback. His rocket arm is insane every time he rips one down the field. He's got great vision, you know, all three levels, left, right, center. He's a leader, seemingly, you know, in the locker room, on the field. He's awesome. But I'm just going to continue with Mike Will a little bit. He's a sell for me. I don't think he's going to continue as, you know, the second best receiver. I would actually be shocked if he finished as a top 12 receiver on the year. We've seen him have, you know, a couple week stretch of big games. I think everybody's freaking out now because it's weeks 1, 2, and 3. We've seen him, let's say weeks 7, 8, 9 go off and then come right back down to earth and get 3.4 points, you know, in a game for the next 3 weeks. So he's a sell for me. If somebody's willing to give you value as if he will be, you know, one of these starting 10, 12 receivers for the year. And he's had injury problems for the year. And I know our friends over at, you know, Next Man Up are going to say, that doesn't mean anything, but he's just one of those guys. Lastly on him, I think he goes the Corey Davis route. He's a UFA at the end of the year. I think he bounces out of LA and tries to get a big bag somewhere else. And that would mean he will likely have a worse quarterback than Justin Herbert next year.
Hey, on Rider Dynasty, when you're right, you're right. And Kit, you get your chance. Go ahead, fanboy it up.
Yeah, I think a lot of things Brendan said are reasonable, right? I'm concerned about a potential injury. I think likely Keenan is going to end up getting more targets. What I would push back on a little bit is I don't know if he's ever had a three-game stretch with this many targets, right? He's done production before on bombs or touchdowns or things like that, but what's really encouraging to me is that he does have, I think, at least more or within the margin of error, the same as Keenan, right? And I still expect Allen to be the one from a real football perspective, basically, but I expect Mike Williams to conceivably continue to be the more viable fantasy asset if they're going to use him as they are. And for all the reasons you said, Justin Herbert was excellent. You know, I think the entire offense really is excellent. They're going to score a lot of points, and he's going to be one of the top two or three guys doing it for him.
This is one of those situations where I think coach speak in the offseason has helped me buy into Mike Williams quicker. Otherwise, it'd be a little more in Brendan's boat. I mean, he's getting the love all offseason. And through 3 weeks, Mike Williams has two fewer targets than Keenan Allen. And it's a two-man show. They both have 31 and 33, and Jared Cook and Eckler have 16 and 15. I mean, it's very much a 1A, 1B situation right now.
Yeah, and to me, this all goes back to the Chargers' stated offseason plan, which was totally rebuild the offensive line and then reap the whirlwind of benefit when Penei Sewell fell directly to them. Or I'm sorry, Rashawn Slater. And that has made all the difference. Now we're seeing every week here that offensive line gels more and more and becomes more and more stable. That translates to time, and you get a guy with a monster arm like Herbert now able to carve up defenses. It's something special, and it's very sustainable. This also plays into how effective Eckler has been and can continue. None of this feels false. All of it is so just easy and repeatable. It's not like we're counting on blowups here. This is real stuff. But speaking of blowups and what could be a Fugazi record here is Denver and their 3-0 start. Teddy B humming the ball all over the place, although the wide receivers are dropping like flies here. Now KJ Hamler out for the year with an ACL. And Jerry Jeudy already out long-term with the high ankle sprain. They're still 3-0. Is this a product of them actually being really good, or is it a product of playing three teams that are now a combined 0-9? Brandon, what's your thoughts?
Yep, it's more of a product of them playing three terrible teams in the Giants, Jags, and Jets. And if we want to focus a little bit on Teddy Bridgewater, this isn't really the start or turning point, I don't think. I mentioned this a little bit. I think it was on the week one pod. But there's been a little bit of a misconception about checkdown Teddy. Last year, he was 12th in the league on yards per attempt, ahead of guys like Russ, Matt Ryan, Herbert, Kyler, Burrow, and Drew Lock, the guy who was like the don't care, sling it down the field guy, whereas Teddy was viewed as the play it safe guy. So I think he's had a little bit of a misconception about him. With that being said, he's QB 16 right now and has played those terrible teams. Giants, Jags, Jets. And last week against the Jets, he didn't even put up 12 points. So I'm not really buying Teddy B as this awesome, you know, QB2 in a super flex league guy.
Robbie, what are your thoughts there?
I got to agree. I mean, I think it's twofold. I think, you know, Bridgewater is less turnover prone than Drew Lock was. And Denver's defense was decimated last year. So they're healthy this year. They're playing a lot better. they've absolutely just beat up on teams that don't even belong in the NFL, frankly. I mean, I think some college teams could beat the Jets and Jaguars right now.
Hey, you didn't say Giants. Thank you.
Gotcha, kid. So why they've been beating up on some bad teams, I mean, when they start playing real teams, you got to imagine that the pass attempts come up and maybe he rises from that QB 16, but still he's a QB 2 at best. I mean, he's not breaking into QB 1 territory by any means. And I mean, last week he had 24 pass attempts. It's got to come up from that on the season. That's his low. He doesn't get to play cupcakes every week.
Look, the big deal here is he's totally touchdown dependent. And he's been throwing some touchdowns specifically to the running backs and tight ends because the wide receivers haven't been getting them. You look at Cortland Sutton, and he is doing little to nothing. Tim Patrick has been in and out. Judy was mostly out. Had a great week one, and then that was it. Got hurt shortly at the back end of that game. Now the Hamler's out. That offense is going to be really limited. They're down to two out of their starting four wide receivers, and they've got the two tight ends. But they do have two very talented backs. That team's bread and butter is going to be ball possession and lean on that strong defense. Maybe they can do it. I don't know. But where we sit right now, if you're trying to get anything out of Denver, it's Tim Patrick for cheap, or to me, either one of the backs. But remember, Gordon probably is only there for another year. So temper your costs and temper what you're willing to expend to try and get that back. And again, the numbers are what they are now. The combined opposition has been slim to none. We've got next, some soft. Yeah.
Real quick. Next 2 weeks, Ravens and Steelers.
So good team, one bad team. Yeah.
Well, say what you will about the Steelers. The defense is still okay-ish.
Yeah, that's true.
The offense, not so much. But the defense, especially if they get TJ Watt back, that's a whole different animal.
For sure.
If they can just somehow score like 17, it might be a ball game.
Get to 17.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen when you're racing to 17. So, speaking of the mighty falling, oof, Miami. Just oof. Brandon, tell me about what's happening in Miami. What?
Well, it's not good. That's what. Gregory Rousseau and my Buffalo Bills killed him. Tua is out with the ribs, and it doesn't look like it's going to get much better anytime soon for the rest of the team. You have to downgrade everybody. They don't have a starting running back that you can feel confident in. They had a safety, Jalen Waddle, safetied in, you know, in the end zone on Sunday. That was a mess.
Bizarre play
call.
Pretty
bad. Yeah, very bizarre, which is kind of out of the ordinary, I think, a little bit from this coaching staff. At least, you know, Brian Flores, we've seen the guy to be like, oh, stable culture, you know, things are going up in the right direction. But it's one play. But, it's not good with Tua out. Things don't look good. And then even when he's in, it doesn't look fantastic. So, I don't know. Jake Glazer's been saying just tonight, even, you know, today's Wednesday, September 29th, there might be some more smoke to the rumors of Deshaun Watson being traded there. He was saying that, for the first time since really ever, Houston is actually picking up the phone, which is a change in their philosophy on trading him or not. So we'll see if there's any traction there, but as far as the current state of the Miami Dolphins fantasy players, they're an immediate downgrade, and I don't see how they improve until Tua comes back and then a couple weeks after that, you know, until they can get their feet under them.
Kit, is there really right now, with the damage, a fantasy-relevant player in Miami?
I mean, dynasty, you know, leagues can get pretty deep, you know, with the benches and the starting requirements. So, I mean, Jalen Waddle had 12 catches. I think they went for 58 yards, which is pretty ridiculous. Maybe it was more than that, but right around there. But, you know, that's relevant, I guess. Miles Gaskin could be a desperation flex play, but I mean, no one I trust, right? No one I'm seeking to acquire, really.
Robbie, can we trust Gaskin at all to get you like 10 in a week, or is it you're just hoping for anything?
I mean, Jacoby Brissett, as long as he's the starter, I've got no faith in that offense. They're going to stack the box. He's not a good quarterback, which he's looked absolutely terrible, which he's coming off a high backup reputation coming from Indianapolis down here. It kind of caught me off guard, but I'm not trusting anyone outside of Waddle until we have a healthy Tua.
I kind of expected Parker to really show us something and at least make himself available in a competent part of the offense, and that just doesn't seem to have really happened this year. So, you know, there was a lot of hope around Miami, and it just hasn't materialized. Maybe once Tua gets healthy again and they can kind of reestablish things, but they're showing just how far away they are. And I know a couple of us actually thought that they could at least be noticeable and be a real participant in the NFC East, which is starting to look awfully least yet again.
After being close to a playoff team last year.
Yeah.
And then improving at least on paper on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, it's a big disappointment.
I have a theory that everyone kind of knows that Tua is not good and it's hurt them psychologically. I don't know. Sounds a little ridiculous, but it'd take the wind out of their sails if he's not. And he hasn't looked dazzling.
So let's dip our toe into the water there with Deshaun. We have no idea what the league penalty might be for whatever any of this actually is, or even if there's going to be one, as to whether it's a civil suit or if the league's going to impose some kind of suspension or something. I mean, the price has to be astronomical. I mean, Kit, what do you think the Texans would even ask for him?
I always see tossed around conditional picks, right? The things based on his availability. I assume any deal that does happen, that would be part of the agreement. Maybe one, you know, normal first round pick, and then two, assuming he plays X amount of games and X amount of time frame, something like that. I don't know. I do see them coming down. He's not going to play for them again by hook or by crook, one reason or another, it appears. So, I think that they might finally start thinking about it. I'm still surprised teams are pursuing him, but he is extremely good at football.
Brandon, from a PR standpoint, is there any, I mean, how do you spin that to your fan base? Like, hey, we want this guy.
It's really tough. And you've just got to talk about, you know, football, I guess. But I think the silver lining for the Dolphins PR staff would be that, you know, Miami doesn't really care that much. You know, there's a lot of cities in the country that, you know, they would be a lot harsher on the team and the, you know, the team social accounts, to be honest, which is basically like the front door for a brand nowadays. So it's really, really tough. It'll be tough to navigate to for any team that'll trade for him. But I agree. I think he won't play another snap for the Texans, and it's tough. The team receiving him just hopes that he's cleared of all charges. That's basically it.
Besides Miami, where might he be a fit, Rob? We're starting to see some teams come up totally quarterback needy, and the 0-3 and looking like 0-many is starting to emerge for several franchises.
Man, I think the popular one preseason was the Eagles. I still believe in Jalen Hurts. It feels a little grosser to say that after 3 weeks. There's a lot of issues. A lot of issues with the Eagles. I don't think all of them are his fault. The Broncos are always going to be a quarterback destination. They're going to be rumored for everyone until they actually get a franchise quarterback. I think Watson or Rodgers ends up there next year. Outside of that, unless we've got someone retiring like Big Ben to come into established offense, I struggle to find a good fit.
I'll give you one more. The Eagles are good, especially because, you know, well, I don't believe in Hurts, but they have, as of right now, two picks in the top six. There is one other team that has two picks in the top 12. Well, two. One is the Jets, but they just drafted Wilson, Giants, so they're not going to bite. The Giants, yep. So as of right now, if the season ended today, the Giants would have the fifth pick and the 12th pick, the 12th courtesy of the Chicago Bears. So I don't
think it's going to get worse. That's great.
Yeah, yep. I don't think Daniel Jones is the guy. I don't think Joe Judge is the guy. I think they're both out. So that might be, you know, another fit.
Well, the best way to prevent Gettleman from screwing them up is to trade him away.
Daniel Jones is definitely that guy.
Yeah.
I want to laugh, but I mean, I laughed at Mike Williams a month ago.
Exactly. I'm fresh. No interceptions. Come on. He's doing his thing.
He's definitely getting a lot more rushing yards than I expected him to. And he's had some legit scampers that were really fantasy savers for several weeks here. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's now, I can't believe I'm saying this, but in the top 20 of quarterbacks for fantasy.
Not top 20. I think he might be top 10 still. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm just going safe because I don't have the number directly in front of me. But yeah, it's mind-blowing to think about that. And they did spend all that money on weapons, so maybe getting a legit dude in there to sling the rock around. I don't know. I still don't trust their offensive line even a little. And until that improves, all those weapons go for naught, which we're seeing all over the league. Offensive line play in so many places is just decayed, and it's so hard to get good ones that it's draft them and develop them or pay through the nose to keep them.
Ooh, Daniel Jones is the quarterback. 10.
QB 11. Oh, okay, I see 11. Okay.
Yeah.
It depends on scoring and format, but yeah.
I'm looking at Fantasy Pros here, and they've got him at 10 ahead of Wilson and Darnold.
And boom.
Two other names we didn't expect to be right there.
It's wild.
We figured Russ would be higher, and we figured Darnold would be way lower.
Water will find its level.
It says something good for Sammy, though. Good for Darnold to be relevant in a conversation where he's actually talked about positively for once. Let's talk about some wide receivers now, and some sophomores are absolutely showing out, even with some questionable situations. We have Henry Ruggs, who last year looked like a total flop, and Michael Pittman in Indy showed virtually nothing. They're both coming alive. To a lesser extent, we've got Denzel Mims starting to show up, and Jalen Reagor at least appearing on televisions near you. What do we think of some of these sophomores? Go ahead, Kit. You can start us off.
Yeah, I'm all in on Pittman. I really like what I've seen. I happen to catch a good amount of both of the last couple weeks of the Colts games. It looks like, you know, he's their wide receiver one, and kind of by a stretch, quite a bit. You know, I like Paris Campbell coming into the season, but he missed a game, and then he hasn't been doing great. You know, behind that, there hasn't been much. So I'm pretty much all in on Pittman. I think that, you know, right now you can get him before he does his breakout level. And I don't know if he scored a touchdown. I think he might not have.
So you that
might
be so. Kind
of, touchdown.
Yeah. I think that might be keeping his price artificially low a little bit. He had 126 receiving yards, I think. So I don't know. I'm all in on Pittman. Ruggs, I'm a little questionable on a team that, you know, is not going to contend this year. I just traded away Higbee for him. And then Mims and Reagor, I think, you know, just all the evidence says that at this point, if you're not doing or flashing much, and I want to believe in Reagor, it's probably not going to happen. So if you can get, you know, recoup second round value or something like that for, I mean, you can't for Mims, but maybe for Reagor, I'd probably do that.
Robbie, tell me a little bit about Ruggs here and what made him so great coming out of college.
Man, I'm the wrong person for that. I am not a Ruggs believer, but I will happily say sweet things about Jalen Reagor because he's not getting a lot of love, and I'm all in on Michael Pittman. I mean, I traded what will certainly be the 201 for him in a rebuild, and I think he's a cornerstone of my team for years to come.
Well, it's interesting that you're in on Reagor because so many aren't, and he does have the unfortunate distinction of being the man taken directly ahead of Mr. Jefferson. What is it you like about Reagor's game?
So if you've watched many Eagles games, which I'm not an Eagles fan, but I've suffered through two of the three this year, mainly because I have a lot of Goddard, Hurts, and Reagor shares due to some incompetence, likely, in my fantasy skills. But this year, Rager has at least two, I'm pretty sure three, maybe even four touchdowns called back. And if he has those, we're talking about him in a completely different light. I mean, and these are not small touchdowns. Most of them have been, you know, 50 yards plus called back for holding. I believe two of them are called back from holding. And then in week two, it was a fantastic play by the DB. He forced him to just touch the line before he caught the ball in the end zone, but absolutely got wide open on a 76-yard touchdown pass.
That was a sick one, yeah.
It was a fantastic play. And, I mean, Rager played at TCU. I think we all liked him. He went to Philly last year in a team that needed immediate production. And the guy was not NFL ready. He did not learn how to be a wide receiver at TCU. He was a dynamic punt returner on a team that had no quarterback at all. And for what it's worth, guys who are dynamic college kick returners and punt returners usually work out in the NFL. Maybe he doesn't get it right this year, but I'll continue to buy him. And if his stock continues to drop, I'll buy him even cheaper where people haven't sold him to me yet. I'm willing to bet on a third-year breakout on him.
Having grown up and lived in the Philadelphia market for all this time, all anybody wants to say is he should be Jefferson. And that's just not fair to him and anything else. I mean, nobody knew that Jefferson was going to do that. It's fortunate that he has, and he's been phenomenal since. But it is what it is. So
he'll never shake that comparison, especially.
No, he won't. And it's
especially because of that Vikings video. That Vikings video too.
Yeah, that helped no one.
They were very excited that the Eagles did that.
Brandon, any of the four that are speaking to you?
If I had to pick, it's Ruggs, week two, over 100 yards, seven catches and a touchdown. Week three, seven more targets, 78 yards, over 10 points. So it's them. The other ones, I don't like any of their quarterbacks at all. And I don't like Jalen Rager's target or talent. Sorry, Rob. His final season at TCU, you know, apparently the Big 12, not apparently, it is, you know, the conference of exorbitant offenses. He only amassed 611 receiving yards in 12 games with five scores. So I don't love Rager and I don't love Hurts, so I'm off of him. If I had to pick, it's Ruggs, but I guess we'll keep it moving because that's all I've got.
The correct answer here is Pittman. The talent is what it is. Ruggs is just a fast dude. Good for him. Derek Carr seems to like him, and that's great. He will continue to get targets, and it's not like he's not going to be relevant. But to me, Pittman is the guy in this pile because I just feel like he has a more well-rounded game and has just a higher ceiling of what he can do as opposed to long ball or no ball, which seems to be the case for both Rager and Ruggs. All right, guys, game time. And tonight's game is a little bit of you can only have one. I'm going to give you three players in a scenario. You get about 30 seconds to justify your choice. They're all going to be comparable players at different spots and different peaks in their evolution as players. So let's start it off with Lockett, Thielen, and Cooks. The old guard of wide receivers who are currently in the lower tier of things that always feel like they're either kind of second thoughts or forgotten. And yet the three guys are only separated by four total points. They're 28 to 31 years old. Of the three, Lockett, Thielen, and Cooks. Robbie, you go first. Who's your guy?
Man, I'm torn. I want to say Brandon Cooks just because the targets will be there week after week, but I think Thielen offers a relatively safe floor as well, but has way more touchdown upside. So I'll go Thielen here. Lockett, I like as well. Just a little too boom bust for me. I'll take the touchdown upside with Thielen and the safer floor.
Brandon?
I'm going Lockett. Russ is my favorite quarterback of the three. Similar answer, you know, the last question, but I like what Shane Waldron, the new OC in Seattle, is doing, passing on early downs, and Lockett's lighting it up. I think he'll continue.
Kit,
I would go Cooks. He's the only guy who's like number one by a mile, right? You know, for this year, and I think that leans for a very, very high floor, even if it is Davis Mills, who I look better than we thought, I think, would have thought, you know, throwing to him, he'll going to get a lot of targets. Thielen's had some injuries in the past. Lockett is maybe a 1B, even though he really exploded. He's a guy who explodes and then has games like last week. So, yeah, I'm about Cooks. And, like, it's weird to say because he did have the concussion, like, scare, but I'm sort of more convinced that he's going to stay at his level for longer than Thielen and Lockett are. I don't know if I have much reason behind that, but I believe it.
Yeah, Cooks is definitely the guy that you could probably count on. But for me, I'm hooked on a Thielen here. The touchdowns, the route running is just so elite. And it's really a two-person wide receiver crew there. I mean, Osborne's shown out to make it a three a bit, I guess. But Thielen is definitely the guy. So that's the old guard of wide receivers. Let's look at some young guys, particularly your one and two players. Jefferson has been dynamic up and down the field, but so has C.D. Lamb. And now Ja'Marr Chase on the scene, 3 weeks, three acrobatic long ball touchdowns, and definitely the apple of Joe Burrow's eye. Of the three of the new guard here, Kit, who's your guy?
Oh, it's Jefferson without question. I feel like Lamb is great. He's awesome. He has the talent. We're not sure if he's the one on his team. Well, I guess Jefferson, you can maybe say the same thing, but you're unsure if he's going to get, you know, all the targets all the time, especially once Gallup comes back. So I don't know, but Jefferson's done it, right? Jefferson's done what everyone like hopes and thinks, and probably myself included, CeeDee Lamb can do, right? He's done it, and now he's sort of started to prove this season that he's going to continue to be a target monster who will produce and be, you know, the number one option on a limited target team, as was just discussed. So he's my guy. I'm going with him.
Brandon.
I am going to go with Lamb. And I hate to be a broken record here, but it's because of the quarterback. I think Dak is a special talent. The way he reads the field, I think he's, you know, can be an elite quarterback in real life and for fantasy, obviously. I think Cousins and Burrow, they're more of like the 12 to 15 range of guys who are good, fine, you know, but they're not Dak level. So for that reason, where there's not a ton of difference in the talent between the wide receivers we're comparing, I'm going to go with Lamb.
Robbie.
I struggle on this one. Out of the three, I probably think Ja'Marr Chase is the most talented, but I mean, he hasn't proved it yet. I think Lamb and Jefferson have both proved it. So I'd eliminate Chase. And I just think CeeDee Lamb's more talented than Justin Jefferson. He's my wide receiver one coming into last season. And he's done enough to prove it to me, even though Jefferson outproduced him significantly last year and looks early on to be the better option.
This is going to be one of those things where it's how many years does Jefferson have to outproduce Lamb before people switch their ID on it? It's going to be like 4 years in. It's like, but no, now Lamb's going to do it. Now he's going to do it.
Well, and a lot of this is how much faith you have in Kellen Mond, because Cousins isn't going to play forever. He just is. He's not Tom Brady. He's already 33 plus. I just don't see it. I mean, Jefferson's great, but it's how much do you believe in Kellen Mond, assuming he's even the next dude? For me, it's Chase. I love the ability. He's done nothing but excel, and he's this year's version of Jefferson. And how refreshing is it to see a wide receiver taken high actually ball out? Because usually those top five wide receivers, for the longest time there, they were nothing but fizzle.
So since Calvin Johnson or something.
Yeah, so it's cool to see somebody actually produce. All right, three running backs that do little but catch passes. They're all on a pitch count as far as running the ball, and yet they still all ball out. We've got the triumphant of Swift, Harris, and Eckler. Brandon, your turn to go first with what might be the impossible task. Who's your guy?
I think this is actually a bit easier than the last one. I'm going to eliminate Eckler because he's 26 years old, and this is a dynasty-focused show. So that leaves Najee, who is 23, and Swift, who is 22. And it's crazy, absolutely crazy to say, but I, as of this moment, I trust the Lions O-line and quarterback more than I trust the Steelers O-line and quarterback. I'd never in a million years thought I would say that, but that's the state that we're in right now. So it's Swift for me.
Strange days for sure. Rob, your turn.
Yep.
Man, that is it's gross to say that, but I got to agree with him. And I'm so out of it in dad mode over here. I saw Harris and was thinking Damian Harris when this question was coming. So I'm glad we've clarified. We're not talking about Damian Harris.
No, it's totally Najee.
I mean, Harris is the most talented of the three, I think, but we're talking dynasty here. I think you have to eliminate Eckler based on age, and it's exactly like Brendan said. I mean, Swift is proving it this year, and he's got a more stable platform to work from. He's playing for a coach who loves to use multiple running backs, use them effectively, and he loves his big guys. He's building an excellent offensive line and defensive line. That's clearly the foundation of the offense, and that will open up holes for Swift for his entire career.
Kit?
So I agree that we have to eliminate Eckler, but I do think that he's going to have the best season of the three of them still. I believe that. Yeah. And so if it was real, I don't know. You could never convince me to trade Swift for Eckler, but if you can get something on top and you're really trying to win that year and that whatever you get on top makes the difference, I don't know. I'd consider that, but I'm all in on Swift, and I would contend that I don't think Harris is more talented than Swift. Swift, I mean, I don't know. Just watching him, it's like he pops off the screen to me every time he touches the ball, and he's getting that sort of insane amount of targets. I think he has 24 through three games. Well, I guess they all are. But I expect that to continue, and Rob, your point's exactly right. It's crazy, but I think whatever you think about Dan Campbell's rah-rah, bite your knees off stuff, the GM seems to have been doing things sort of the right way, right? Build from the inside out, get a coach and offensive coordinator, I guess, who knows kind of what to do with the personnel they have. And so, yeah, I'm all in on Swift. He's one of my biggest buys in all of dynasty.
Yeah, the cool thing about Swift is none of this is unsustainable. That is until they actually get wide receivers to throw the ball to if and when that ever happens. But we're not there now, and it may not be next year.
Not even the year after.
So who even knows? In Pittsburgh land, they're coming into the offseason with $100 million in cap space and the full complement of draft picks. I have to think that offensive line is going to be a monstrous priority. And once that happens, the Steelers have done nothing but demonstrate over their entire tenure that they're happy to pick a running back and give them the football always. So for me, it's Najee, and maybe not for this year, but for the going further and going next year on, I want Najee Harris. All right. Couple things to wrap up here, folks. First of all, for our friends who play the Survivor Fantasy Football here, so far we're doing pretty good with looking at what's going to go on, and this week provides a few interesting matchups for you. The Chiefs have been wonky on defense in particular, and they marched themselves into Philadelphia. I think this might actually be the time to take the Chiefs because I just don't see the offense being able to keep pace with the Chiefs' pretty solid offense this year, even though they're not moving at the pace they were, still good enough to get by the Birds. And I don't know that that's going to continue if there's one or two more injuries. So it may be time to burn the Chiefs. Anybody else see any games they like? Brandon, yeah, there's got to be one for you, man.
It's the Buffalo Bills. My bill. Anytime you can get a 17-point favorite, you know, as just a pick 'em play, you got to do it. They're going to smoke them on Sunday.
Yeah, the Texans coming into Buffalo stand little to no chance.
A deep dive here, and if anyone from my league is listening right now, you know who my survivor pick is going to be. It feels gross, but I think this is the only week you will feel safe about betting on the Cincinnati Bengals. I think they're a touchdown favorite against the Jaguars. The Jaguars just moved their best DB. They can't keep pace with the Bengals. They can't keep pace with the Bengals offense. And I will happily risk a Cincy loss here on Thursday night to never have to think about playing Cincinnati again for the rest of the year.
I hate short weeks on the road, man.
It's gross. It's gross.
I hate short weeks on the road. I can't bring myself to do it. But, Kit, do you see one out there?
I think the only thing I'd say is I have no idea what to do with the Saints. Like, I wouldn't want to take the Saints, not just being a Giants guy. They could absolutely kill the Giants. But they've done, like, basically, good Goldilocks. They had extremely good, not so good, and quite bad games in the first three. So I have no idea what the Saints are on offense, really, or defense. And so probably just not a gimme. Stay away.
The line is 8 right now. I think there'll be better opportunities. Remember, right. The Saints will play Saints. Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I think I would probably hold on to the Saints. So for me, it's probably either time to use the Bills, or if you want to save the Bills for down the pike, it might be time for the Chiefs. College, though.
Sorry.
Yeah. I can't bring myself to do it. Just not on. If that was a Sunday game, I'd be all over it. But on a Thursday, I just can't do it.
The Bills get to play, man. They get to play the Dolphins and the Patriots and the Jets. They're just so juicy later on in the
season. Oh, I know.
I can't bring myself
to do it.
I know it.
Put that in the back pocket.
On to college and Devy time. Ole Miss coming into Tuscaloosa to see Bama, number 12 versus number 1, and definitely a Devy showcase here with all kinds of potential for next year's draft and the 2023 class that is just absolutely loaded. Kit, your guy going to show out here?
Yeah, he's going to do it. I tentatively believe. I don't know. I think we got a shot. I think Corral's very good. The offense has been humming. The defense has been awful last year, so much better. Alabama was Alabama, right? So I would say I think we have less than a coin flip's chance, but I think we got a good chance. Let me put it that way. And I'm putting my eggs in that basket. One of the better chances, I think, this year for Alabama to lose in the regular season. So we'll see.
Robbie, Arkansas comes down to Georgia here. Can they give the dogs a devil of a time, or is it all dogs all day?
That UGA defense is just too good. It's too good. They're going to shut Arkansas down. Arkansas has some great skill players, surprisingly. I mean, Burks with his like quadruple XL hands and just the monstrous ability at the wide receiver position. But I'm confident UGA shuts everyone down outside of him. He might still feast, but it still might be a blowout with, you know, 10 or 14 points put up on the board. Seen what UGA did to Clemson, which Clemson's not looking so good right now, and what they've done to other ranked opponents. I just don't think Arkansas is that level.
I don't think they are. I don't think they will be. It's go dogs. Brandon, any games standing out to you?
The only, the two that we named are going to be pretty fun to watch. We failed to mention, the return of Lane Kiffin to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
The final one that I'll mention is Maryland, Iowa. If Maryland only they play, I think Penn State and Michigan State's not really good, but Ohio State, if they only have maybe one loss, is Talia Tagovailoa going to get some Heisman votes?
There you go. And some draft buzz, maybe.
Maybe.
The other Tagovailoa is definitely a highlight reel. Friday Night Lights, number 5, Iowa, coming into Maryland. The long trip, short week, off a big win for Iowa. Could this be the letdown, and could the Hawkeyes fumble one here? No, but it'll be entertaining for sure. I really think this game's going to be very close. The line is actually really close, so it's definitely going to be compelling and well worth the watch. So there you go, your college week in review. All right, fellas, time for tags. Robbie, start us off.
All right, guys, you can find me on Twitter and on Reddit at TheRotoRob. My social media activity has dipped. I've got a wonderful 2-week-old daughter that occupies most of my time rather than fighting with random people on Reddit, which is just not quite as fun. But 2 weeks in, diaper pro, I can change a diaper quicker than the Bears offensive line can crumble these days. And I'm out of the loop on college. Excited to find out that Iowa and Maryland's Friday night when I'm watching the baby.
Brandon?
I'm on Twitter at BC Taff. Go Bills.
Kit?
I'm on Twitter at KitV_DynastyFF. And Rob, don't worry. Soon enough, you'll learn the key is you watch the kid while you argue with people on Reddit. It really helps to kind of pass the time.
There we go. Sage advice. And for a little more, I'll look towards the Dynasty world here as we look at our teams. And it's time really now, after 3 weeks, you should have a fair idea of where you're headed. It's time to be real and time to be straight up with yourself. Do we need to start buying? And if so, start looking now so you can get yourself in position and start targeting those teams that are in 0-3 land and looking just sad. Pick your piece. Decide if you like the 2022 class, whether you're going to move your draft picks to go up or whether you want to start hoarding to move and be ready to load up for next year. It's time to start looking ahead. I know it feels like we're just getting going, but the successful owners have the long-term vision. All right, guys. Another wonderful installment of the Rider Dynasty podcast. Again, please check us out online at riderdynasty.com. Have a wonderful week.